Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. As the Trump administration seeks to dehumanize, terrorize, and criminalize our immigrant communities, organizations are mobilizing in solidarity to protect and empower people targeted by ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. My guest is Carla Castaneda, Executive Director of VOCE, Workers' Rights Education Project. VOCE is a worker-led organization that helps improve day laborers and immigrants' working conditions and protect civil rights. VOCE recently organized a caravan to the Northwest Detention Processing Center in Tacoma, Washington, to call for the release of asylum seeker Jorge Luis Rinaldo, who is being detained at the facility. Carla, welcome.
Hi.
So, Carla, let's start with talk a little bit about why this is of interest to you, working with day laborers, domestic workers, and then let's talk about the work of VOCE.
Yeah, for sure. So, I've been at VOCE for 3 years now, I believe. You know, in my journey at VOCE, I felt was destined in the way that, you know, I come from an immigrant family. I myself am an immigrant. And VOCE really caters to folks that are undocumented, that are asylum seekers, that are refugees, that are really forgotten in a lot of ways and live in intersectionalities that are always under attack from gender, class, language, and documentation status. And VOCE is the only organization of its kind in Oregon. So it holds a very critical position in Oregon to really cater and foster relationships with day laborers who are often exploited, dehumanized, and criminalized for seeking work, for seeking survival, for seeking safety and dignity. So I started at VOCE 3 years ago, really trying to understand how to better support our immigrant workers, how to better support our immigrant communities, and how to be better in the way that, you know, we knew that elections were coming up. We knew the pandemic was such a hard hit, specifically, you know, to the day labor community and folks that were houseless or are houseless. And day laborers are that, you know, they couldn't work from home. You know, often their work is outdoors, inside people's homes, cleaning their homes. And they lost a lot during the pandemic. It was a period of, are we going to make it? Are they going to make it? And getting out of the pandemic mode and really into what the organization's vision was, just leadership development and education, I came in through that period of transition where they were just surviving, getting through the pandemic, surviving the post-pandemic. And then VOCE also experienced some fires and relocations. So the Jornaleros fought really long time with the city to grant them a central location on MLK and Everett. However, in the pandemic, there was a lot of safety concerns and they moved to like Prescott 102nd. And then our office was part of an arson attack and that building was set on fire, which put VOCE in a tricky position. And then after that, we really focused on trying to build stability with the day laborers taking always on their leadership, figuring out what they wanted to do. We worked with PCC, with the Portland Community College, to build to pilot a workforce development program that gave day laborers a certificate from PCC when, you know, higher education always seemed impossible. We began to advocate in a national scale with the National Day Labor Organizing Network. We just started to really try to build stability and get our faces out there again. And in preparation to the election, when the results came through in November, you know, we as an organization, we realized that it was going to be a hard, you know, a hard pivot in the way that all of our ongoing program was so essential and critical, but also the protection of our immigrant communities is also so important and critical. You know, I don't think we expected this turmoil that we are experiencing. And I think we were a little positive in the way that, like, we knew we needed to prepare, but not in this level. And leading an organization is really hard, especially if you're only a team of two and serving 50 to 60 day laborers on a daily basis for 6 days a week is pretty exhausting. And it's really hard to meet everyone's needs. But also this work is so critical in this moment. You know, when our day laborer, Jorge Luis, got detained, it really brought a sense of unity in our community, a sense of fear in our community. But we knew that we couldn't go into panic mode, but we needed to plan. And that's where we are right now. We are trying to plan. We are trying to protect each other. And we're really rooted in this value or this principle of solo el pueblo salva el pueblo, which translates to only the people save the people. Because we recognize that elected officials can only do so much and will always only do so much. We know that systems are meant to break us, not protect us, and that only the community can really show up and stand for what it's right.
Now, there are a lot of employment agencies out there that could help people. So why are they not serving the immigrant community?
So First Voice is not an employment agency. It's a nonprofit organization that focuses on leadership development, education, and economic opportunities. And that's where our Worker Center, which is one of our biggest programs, comes into play. It is where day laborers gather every morning, Monday through Saturday, to wait for work. So we have a platform where employers can go in online to our website and fill out a form requesting a worker. The minimum is set by the workers, as well as the type of work that they can do. In addition to that, employers are able to come in and just request a worker for that day or give us a call in our number and we'll set that up. The way that it was set up is that in the 1990s, there was a lot of criminalization of day laborers in particular. And day laborers are folks that are in a corner in front of Home Depot, in front of Lowe's, trying to seek employment. And it's temporary employment, not permanent employment. It's day jobs. So it's, a residential homeowner is looking to get their yard cleaned and they want to hire just a person for one day to help them out. That's what a day laborer does. Or, there's a construction company that needs to finish their job in 2 days and, they need more workers, and that's when they hire day laborers and they pay them in cash at the end of the workday. And it's only a day or 2 day job. These folks are undocumented or fixing their status, meaning that they don't have work authorizations, meaning that they don't have an ITIN number, but they still need to survive, right? They still need to feed their families. They still need to pay their bills. And the only way to do that is by working. And, folks in temp agencies or employment agencies are always trying to connect folks to, let's say, a regular 9-to-5 job that requires a social security number, that requires folks to show up on a consistent basis. And some of our members aren't able to do that. We have folks that are the main family caregiver and only can work 4 hours a day or only can work one day in a week. A lot of our folks are also houseless and they can't work 8 hours because they have to be at the shelter by a certain time. So VOS is unique in a way that we take everything in consideration and work under their terms and conditions in order to best support them, in order for them to have economic stability and really try to eliminate every barrier possible.
And are all of the workers seeking asylum in the United States?
Not all of our workers are seeking asylum. Some of our workers are also just undocumented, and it is not because they don't want to adjust their status. It's because there is no line or no pathway for them to adjust their status. A lot of them have been here since they've been kids, since they've been young people, and for years and decades, and there hasn't been a way for them to adjust their status, right? I came here when I was 4 and I barely had the opportunity to adjust my status with DACA. There is no pathway, really. And I think it's really frustrating to continue to hear the narrative as well of people should just get in line and do it the right way. But when you are trying to seek safety and then you are trying to build a better life, build a dream, and there is no way for you to do it the right way, it makes it really complicated and feel like you're failing or having to prove your humanity in order to be considered worthy. It feels really horrible. And when I'm referencing the right way, there's a narrative going around, asking people like, you should have come here legally. Why cross the border and not go through the legal process? People are always assuming that there is a line to get here or that there is a legal process to get here. And it's more complicated than folks make it seem. So a lot of folks are trying to flee injustices, fleeing poverty, fleeing to find a better future and to build something with their families. And in order to go through a legal system, it often comes in barriers. Most of the times, these countries are corrupted. You need a lot of money. And if people are already fleeing because they are living in poverty, they don't have the resources to navigate that system that is corrupt. And you're only going to get through it if you know the right people, if you have the right resources, right? And people are fleeing poverty, violence for a better future, for hope. And when you're here, you know, already building something, when you are contributing to the community, there is no pathway for you to adjust your status. You're stuck in limbo. You're stuck contributing to a community that you really care for by contributing to taxes, by, you know, being part of this economy, by working and purchasing, by volunteering and supporting your community in so many other ways. And yet there's no line or there's no pathway in which you can adjust your status now. You're just stuck.
So, Carla, let's talk about Jorge Luis. Now, he is a Venezuelan and he is currently detained at the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, Washington. What happened? Why was he arrested? Why is he detained at the Tacoma Center?
So Jorge came with us for about 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago. He came to our organization seeking job opportunities. He was just a very cheerful, like outgoing young human. He's very young, and he was here alone. So he heard from a friend that Vol supports in different types of things, and that he could find an opportunity with the organization. Throughout his time at the organization, he has participated in our PCC accredited workforce development program with irrigation. He has gone with us to national conferences. So he's been to New Jersey and Seattle and New York to protest for workers' rights and immigrant rights work. You know, he met with a lot of different organizers nationally, talking about strategies and tactics and ways that we can protect our fellow immigrant communities and how we can show solidarity. VOS has transitioned from a bilingual organization, you know, really primarily serving English and Spanish speakers, to now serving up to 12 different languages, you know, serving folks from indigenous languages from Africa, from West Africa. You know, we have folks speaking Lingala and Wolof. And a lot of the times it's really hard. So Jorge, through these conferences, was able to be like, we need to show up for our immigrant brothers and sisters that are not part of the Latin American community, but are still immigrants and still need to be organized and prioritized. You know, and he's built so much rapport with that particular community as well in our center. So he was doing great. He was thriving. You know, he got semi-regular jobs because of his work ethic. He's such a hardworking individual. He started building a really strong foundation with community members within our worker center, but he's also a person of faith. So also with his church community. And, you know, he was through his asylum process, he was just trying to, you know, meet the requirements, always showing up on time, always making sure that he did the right thing. And when Trump got elected, we started in the first 100 days, started getting really intense of his election, and people were really afraid. And he offered, you know, to help us with some know your rights training. So always being really informed. At VOS, we offered, because we know that we serve a lot of asylum seekers, we told them that, you know, we gave them all your notes rights, but we also let them know that they could never show up alone to the court or to ICE check-ins. So on February 19, Jorge had received a call from ICE, and they were like, hey, we need you to show up just to sign some paperwork, and then it's gonna be okay, just like regular. Because he's an asylum seeker, they have to present themselves in ICE, but they have scheduled ICE check-ins. So this would be considered an irregular check-in. And we knew that this was happening already prior to Jorge Luis getting this call. So we were a little worrisome. We were connected with PERC and we called their hotline. PERC is an organization that started for immigrant rights to specifically support folks that are undocumented, that are asylum seekers, that are refugees. They started a hotline back then where they were able to verify different incidents of ICE sightings. They also provided know your rights trainings. And they have a rapid response team that includes legal observers that that includes people that are there to verify current situations, as well as to send lawyers out and making sure that folks have the right representation. Jorge Luis' story is, it's really sad. Kind of the story that really started preparing these rapid responses differently. Because when we called, it wasn't that they weren't prepared because they are doing everything that they can. It's no say volunteer ran. But we learned a lot of lessons from Jorge Luis is really what I'm trying to say. So we called them and, they offered the support that they could. They said, don't let him go by himself. We can't assign a lawyer right now because, there's just no capacity. But if anything happens, call us right away. Aside from PERC, I really tried to connect with immigration attorneys and seeking out to my network, but it was really hard in the way that it was very last minute. A lot of folks are at capacity. So he ended up just going alone with one of our staff members. Her name's Anika. And him and her went. He was able to go in. She was taken to the back and she was not allowed to go in the back with him. And then a few moments later, she was informed that he was going to get detained for a custody redetermination. And that was because he was in a list that came from Washington, D.C. When we questioned what this list was, why he was in this list, and what it meant, we got no comment. PERC was able to send an attorney right away, try to stop the transfer from the ICE building in McAdam to the Northwest Tacoma Detention Center. Again, she was met with he's on a list that came from Washington, D.C., no other comment. And that because he was on this list, they needed to do a redetermination, a custody redetermination, and he was transferred. His lawyer, as well as us, believe that this list that they so say that he is in is only because he is a brown, Venezuelan young man. He does not have any tattoos. He does not have any criminal record. He came here seeking safety. He came here seeking asylum, so that he could build a future with dignity and safety. And he wasn't met with that. He was met with concrete walls and a cell.
And what is the fear now?
I feel the fear keeps changing and it grows on a continuous basis. We knew that Venezuelan men in particularly were being targeted when he was detained. And that is when a plane went to El Salvador and a lot of folks were locked up there. That was the fear of like, will he get transferred? Will he go there? The fear then transferred to, will he go to Guantanamo Bay? Will he also disappear into that? Right now, the fear is, will he get transferred one more time? There's folks in Tacoma. There's about 40 folks that recently got transferred to Alaska with really no notice. Now there's a memo going out that they're trying to send people to Guantanamo Bay again because the detentions in the United States are at capacity. So the fear is ongoing. We don't know what could happen. We don't know if he can be transferred, making it impossible for him to, get his basic needs met, as well as have community there. He doesn't have family here. He's alone, but he does have a lot of friends that really care for him. He has a lot of community that really care for him. So having him at the Northwest Tacoma Detention Center makes it accessible for people to visit him. And it's also easier for us to continue to fight his case. I think the fear is how much longer can someone hold their sanity when you are getting fed rotten food or only fed one time a day or barely going outside or not given the proper medical attention. He's struggling. He's a very positive young man that has this huge smile. And if you call him today, he'll greet you with that smile, but you'll see in his eyes the fear, the frustration, this feeling of when will this end? We've organized a caravan from Portland to Tacoma in order to show solidarity. And, there was day laborers who were really afraid to show up because they are undocumented. And they're like, I'm going to be standing outside a detention center, putting myself at risk. And they said, if I was there, I need to know that my community is still backing me up. And they showed up. We had day laborers actually sing to Jorge Luis and all of the folks detained. So we started our programming with music because music always brings our community together. And they sang to him. We had amazing speakers. We had amazing community presence and support. And when we tried to call Jorge Luis so that he, as well as the other folks detained, can see that there's community fighting for them, I cut the connection. And we tried multiple times, and they just cut the connection so that he was unable to see all of the support that he was getting. We're also trying to get some Congress members to advocate on his behalf. He has a hearing on September 29th around his asylum, which at this moment doesn't really give a lot of hope, given that folks' cases are dismissed and then they are deported or detained. He went for a hearing for a bond and it was denied, as we were expecting it to get denied. There's actually a class lawsuit going on because of that, because judges didn't feel like they had the authority to grant bonds during immigration cases. The lawyer has appealed it, and we were really feeling really optimistic about it. However, the immigration board that does the appeal bonds put out a statement saying that they felt that the judges denying these bonds had all the right to do so. So we don't know if his bond appeal is going to get approved, which is only going to his stay at the detention center longer. And again, we don't know what's going to happen with this asylum case, given everything that's happening, not just in Oregon, but nationally. So I think we're in a place of a little loss and really trying to get support from decision makers and trying to figure out if they can hold their leverage for the community, right? We say that we stand with immigrant communities, but words can only go so long. We need actions that really show the community that they care. I mean, going back to Venezuela, he would actually face prosecution. It would be very unsafe for him. Right now we are advocating for him. We are putting his story out there, saying all of these things that he has experienced in Venezuela and why he came here. And the Venezuelan government is seeing that, which puts him at risk, not only him, but his family. And even though his story needs to be shared and we need to continue advocating for it, because we are sharing and making him so visible, it also puts him at risk in his country, in a bigger risk that he currently is. And he's willing to take that risk because he believes that there will be justice, that he has been doing the right thing, but he's definitely very unsafe. And we need community to know that he is risking everything for an opportunity to survive and thrive. And that's what a lot of immigrant communities are experiencing, right? Jorge Luis's story is not unique. It is ongoing. Families are being ripped apart. People are being detained simply for seeking work. In California, we are seeing how day laborers are getting picked up at Home Depots, just trying to get job for the day, trying to feed their families. We are seeing families be so afraid to go to their kids' graduation because people have been detained during those moments. People are afraid to show up at court hearings because they know that they're following the system. But not even because they're following this process the system put in place, it's being respected. They are being torn apart from their kids. And there's so much fear that is spreading, so much unknown and uncertainty that folks are also in this panic mode. And we need to remember that we cannot panic in the moment of fear. We need to organize, we need to resist, and we need to really show solidarity with each other and love. Because right now we're in so much need of community. We are so much in need of resistance. This is where community as a whole can come into play. There's so many call of actions from showing up to the streets and protesting if you are able to safely, and always trying to de-escalate any moments. Given that right now ICE and the police are always going to be attacking our communities, we also want folks to organize. So many different ways of organizing your community by teaching them know your rights trainings, by making sure that everyone has, a number to call if ICE shows up, making sure that people have family plans. If you do get detained, where are your kids going? Who's going to take care of your financial assets? We need people to plan that as well and coordinate that. We also need healing spaces and community spaces where people can process and grieve and build together so that folks don't feel all of these feelings on their own because it can feel really isolating and really lonely. We need folks to call their elected officials to hold the people that we elected accountable. They are supposed to represent us regardless of our documentation status. They are the people that are supposed to, stand for our rights, for all of the people. that are in their districts. So we need to hold them accountable, and we love to hear their speeches, but we also would love to have them take action and really show up. We want to make sure that we're fighting in the legislature and making sure good bills are passing. We need to make sure that the right people are running for office. There are so many lanes that people can take, but we all have to do something.
Carla, give your website phone number.
Our website is portlandvotes.org, but you can also give us a call at our workers center, and it's 503-234-2043. There's a lot of information on our website. Also, at our social media, you'll find regular updates around Jorge Luis's story, as well as how to get organized and how to support your community. So we have a lot of different calls of actions, and specifically on how to do it, where to do it. So also follow our Instagram at Voice Portland.
Carla, thank you so much and all the best to you with all of your wonderful work.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for taking the time.
I've been speaking with Carla Castaneda, Executive Director of VOCE Workers' Rights Education Project, and thank you for listening.